I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Joanne Darcy, and you're listening to High Performance Woman Podcast, where we're elevating stories of high performance women from across the globe. Here's what we have coming up for you today.
Like, at the worst of it, I would have been having panic attacks on air. And I think the panic actually died down a lot after I had my baby boy, because nothing is as important as keeping him alive and minding him, because it wasn't what I expected it to be like. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the motherhood journey that I was sold, you know, on Instagram. You should, you know, it's this should mentality. I should be grateful. I should be in love with this baby. And then you feel rotten because you haven't bonded straight away. You didn't get that explosion of love that people talk about. You don't want to do these Instagram perfect pictures. You're just in absolute shock. I hid it from my family, which is not like me at all. I'd be very close to my sisters, but I did not want to talk about it. So you push it down. I pushed it down anyway. I knew that I started to feel better when I didn't spend the day giving myself a hard time over something small. I have two beautiful, healthy babies, and it's thanks to my body.
Today, I'm speaking to Caroline Tuig. Caroline has been a news anchor and reporter for the last 15 years, working on various national television and radio shows. She's currently the anchor of Virgin Media's News at 7 and has previously delivered morning news on Ireland AM, as well as the news at 5:30. She trained with CNN in Atlanta and has anchored many special news broadcasts over the years. When not delivering the breaking news to the nation, she is wife and mother of two young babies, having given birth to her second child, a little girl, just 2 months ago. Caroline, I'm honoured that you could join me here today, not only because you are a news anchor, a high performance woman, a wife, a mother, but also one of my oldest and dearest friends.
Oh, Joanne, you're going to start me off already. Well.
Since we were 12 years old, and we started in secondary school. And I think you'd agree, we've been through many highs and lows together over the years with our extended group of girls. And I'm more than excited to be discussing some of those today. So thank you so much for agreeing to come on and join me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so proud. I'm so proud. And whoever she is sounds great in that bio, but you've seen what the real me is like. That's just the career part. But no, I'm absolutely honoured and very proud to be part of this.
Well, Caroline, I am really curious to know, what attracted that shy, quiet, timid girl that I met, I won't say how many years ago, to a life in front of the camera?
Right. Well, I suppose I always struggled, and I think I still do, with actually being in front of camera. So it happened step by step. If you had told that quiet 12-year-old that you're going to be on national television, I think I would have peed my pants and ran away because I just struggled with that big time. But it was happened quite organically, I suppose. I always wanted to be a producer of documentaries. I always thought that, you know, I'd do news things and they'd be really interesting, or even like National Geographic stuff where you're in the background and you're never seen. So when I started, when I was a researcher then for Ireland AM back in TV3 days, I kind of gravitated towards the news items, and they started then giving me the news items of the day. And then the next step was maybe to do a report on them or do a little documentary series. So I did a documentary series on the women's prison, The Joy. And then the news department said, oh, she's serious about this kind of stuff. So they took me on. And the next step was to voice reports. So I freaked out over that for a while and practiced my voice over and over again. And then I start voicing reports. And the next step was to be in front of camera. And like, you do your report and you just finish off with a piece to camera, you know, outside wherever the story was based. And it went from there. And then I went for an audition for news reading and got it, to my absolute horror. And then I had to be live on camera. It was FYI back in the day, and I was the anchor, and it was a live half hour at 6 o'clock. So the pressure was on. So I was thrown in at the deep end. But I have to say, once I get over the nerves, I love it. Like, I love it. And I have to keep reminding myself, it's not about you, it's about the story. And once I get that into my head, then I'm not as self-conscious. It's about telling people what's happening at home and around the world. And that's the main thing. And that's what I thrive on. I love that.
Yeah. And when you say once you get over the nerves, it sounds pretty current.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's in the present tense that you're talking about. Is it still as nerve-wracking as it would have been all those years ago?
No, thank God. Because I think if you keep doing something, your brain eventually realises this is not going to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to die because I'm live on air. But it's taken years. And like, at the worst of it, I would have been having panic attacks on air and having to mask that while reading the news. So it's the panic rising, as you know, like the countdown is coming. And it's more, to be honest, it's the fear of the panic attack that breeds the panic more than the fear of the doing the thing. But once you get into that state of fear, it's very, very hard to get out of it.
As you're speaking, I can feel the
fear
rising in myself. What do you do in those moments?
I was thinking about it today, like talking about the time of panic attacks, and I was getting palpitations, like, and sweating, and it's horrible. It's a horrible place to be. But like anything, unfortunately, mental health or physical health, there's no quick fix. So perseverance and mindfulness was what really helped me. But it was a long process. So I just had to keep turning up, doing it, reminding myself I didn't die, even though you feel like your heart might explode out your chest. I didn't die, and I still completed the task, which was, you know, reading the news for a half an hour live on air, going through that. I did it and I'm alive, and go back in and do it the next day. But mindfulness, like over weeks and months, definitely was the thing that helped me.
What mindfulness techniques specifically would you use, or would you recommend for people to use who will be in similar situations regularly in terms of the feeling?
Yeah, I used a book, and it was, I should have learned the author's names to tell you today, but it's like, it's a 6-week program through a book. If you just look up mindfulness, I think it's the number one bestseller for mindfulness. And it comes with audio. So it's guided mindfulness meditations. Mm-hmm. There's lots of them. And you progress through like the basic body scan, you know, that kind of going through from your feet right up to your head, to sitting for maybe 20 minutes and listening to sounds. And it's all different types of awareness through your body. And it just brings you back into the moment. Like, the only quick fix would be medication. And for me, that wasn't right, because I needed to give myself the tools to do this for life, because I knew I wanted to keep doing it for life. And I just had to keep telling myself, because you're having panic attacks doesn't mean you can't do your job. That was the real deep-seated fear of, I can't do this, I can't do this. And that's what would be screaming in my head as the panic was rising. I can't do this, can't do this, can't do this. And eventually it stopped gradually. And I had another voice in my head that was, I suppose, like the mother voice within, you know, that we all have this mother voice within. And it would say, quieten down now, you can, enough out of you kind of thing, okay. You know, just that kind of stern mother, like, yes, I know, you don't try and stop it. That's the thing with panic. You can't stop it. So let it come. Let it be like a toddler who's having a tantrum on the floor and you're like, yes, yes. Well, you still have to get up and get dressed and go to school. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just that. I hear you. OK, I hear you. But we're doing this anyway.
Yeah.
And that took over in the end. And the screaming voice got quieter. But again, it was over time. I had support. Like, I would have a great group of friends like yourself. I have brilliant family, sisters, my husband. Like, you have a great support network, but ultimately you have to teach yourself the tools to be able to come out of it yourself. And now if I, you know, nerves are a part of life. Anxiety is a part of life. But the panic attack, that's an extreme reaction, I think. And that's something that you can't maintain for long. But everyone goes through it. Do not think that you can't do something because you're having a panic attack. And I think
that's great advice. And it just shows so much strength and resilience that you got through that.
I still feel some of the residue of that fear. That
I've got a sweaty upper lip there. Thinking about it. But
Exactly. Well, you can see mine, obviously. So as you progress through your career with Virgin Media, obviously life changed personally for us, particularly over the last number of years. What was that like while you were at the top of your career and then going through so many changes in terms of getting married and... Mm-hmm. Having children.
Yes. I think the last 3 years, my life has changed majorly. Like, becoming a mother is the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. And that has changed my mind, my priorities, my whole life has changed. And I think the panic actually died down a lot after I had my baby boy, because nothing is as important as keeping him alive and minding him. And like, I don't find work near as stressful as I used to, because if you're dealing with a toddler that's having tantrums, it's like Guantanamo Bay tactics. Like, you can persevere anything if you can get through a day with a really unsettled child or toddler. I go into work now and I'm going live on air and it's nothing compared to dealing with a tantrum. You know, the stress levels are just no comparison. So he's taught me a lot and my priorities have shifted a lot. And having him, I think, was a big shift, because it wasn't what I expected it to be like. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the motherhood journey that I was sold, you know, on Instagram, and being so naive to believe that that's what it would be like with your perfect baby and your picture perfect life and your matching pajamas and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not what it was like for me.
And what was your reality at the time?
So unfortunately, I felt from very early on that it was like something bad had happened to me. Now, I had my baby 2020, November 2020. So we were smack bang in the middle of a pandemic. And looking
back, quite a lonely time.
It was very isolating. Yeah, like, my husband was only allowed in for 2 hours into the hospital, which was shocking because it's his baby too. And it was his first baby and both of our experiences. And I needed him.
So at what point was he able to join you?
So he was allowed in for 2 hours a day. And he was there for the delivery, which was as planned. I got amazing care in the rotunda. They played music as my baby was delivered by C-section. It all went amazingly to plan. And yet I still felt that something bad had happened to me. And on paper it hadn't, but it was just that shock reaction of the pressure of having to keep this little thing alive, the pain of having a major surgery, being alone. I had a room on my own, which was like, I was very grateful for, but at the same time, I was completely alone with this new baby. And I just went into some sort of state of panic. And looking back, I can see now that the postnatal depression had already set in. I didn't know it then.
That early?
Yeah, I didn't realise it, but I think, like, hormonally, it never came back up again. My hormones never picked up. They went right down. I was getting surges of, you know, panic, of anger. That's something that I never thought I'd feel as a new mom, to feel anger and rage. And you're so exhausted and you just feel like a terrible, terrible person, that you should, you know, it's this should mentality. I should be grateful. I should be in love with this baby. And then you feel rotten because you haven't bonded straight away. You didn't get that explosion of love that people talk about. You don't want to do these Instagram perfect pictures. You're just in absolute shock. And I let that go on for nearly 10 months before doing something about it. Wow. Now, in the meantime, the love did come for my little boy. And like, I'm more in love with him today than ever. So I would say to anyone who needs to hear it, if you're not bonding with your baby, you're not a bad mom. If you feel rotten all the time, you're not a bad mother. Like, these things happen. They're not really spoken about. And I did not want to speak about it. If you had to come to me as a friend and said, I think you've postnatal depression, I think you're struggling. To me, postnatal depression was a dirty word. I did not want any association with it. If someone had said it to me, I would have felt like they were accusing me of something terrible.
What was your perception, or what images did that conjure up for you mm-hmm. before you fully understood it or accepted it?
Yeah, I suppose I had a very negative perception of postnatal depression. I would have thought that that person was not maybe meant for motherhood, was not cut out for motherhood, mm-hmm. and suffered with mental health issues. You know, so I had a dark cloud around that perception. And it can happen to anybody. It doesn't mean that you're bad. It doesn't mean that you're going to suffer with mental health issues for the rest of your life. But like we say, mental health issues, everyone has mental health issues, you know? Yeah. And I'm learning all the time about it. But at that time, it took me months and months of suffering and of crying every day and hoping it would get better, but kind of knowing deep down, I wasn't going to say, meditate my way out of this. I wasn't mm-hmm. going to use mindfulness to get my way out of it. And eventually, when I let it get bad enough and actually had two good friends tell me, you're not okay. And like my poor husband, he wasn't okay either because the two of us were still in shock. He was trying to look after me and the baby. It didn't help. Like our little baby boy was very unsettled. He had a lot of digestive issues. So on top of my hormones being rock bottom, I was not sleeping and he didn't sleep for 14 months. So it was a very difficult time. Then my husband went back to work and he was working shifts. So he was working nights and his own mental health took a knock and he was also trying to look after me. So I hid it from my family, which is not like me at all. I'd be very close to my sisters, but I did not want to talk about it. So you push it down. I pushed it down anyway until I was in a very, very dark place.
And it took two friends to come to you and yeah. highlight to you that we think you're not okay. And
yeah.
what happened next?
I just said, well, what's the point in talking about it? What's the point in doing anything about it? This is my life now. I'm a mother and I don't really matter anymore. So I just have to get on with it. That was that mentality. Also, I didn't want to talk about it because I felt the guilt of not loving my baby enough. But it's nothing to do with love. It's like, if you were deficient in iron, you'd take a tablet.
Yeah.
You know, if you were deficient in B12 like I am, you get injections. My hormones were so low that I wasn't going to think myself or love myself out of it. It had gone too far. So eventually I went to my GP and immediately burst into tears. And he said that to me, look, you need intervention, medical intervention. It's like having a B12 deficiency. You don't think anything of that. So you need help with your hormone imbalance. And that's all it is. It's a hormone imbalance. If you're under stress for a long period of time, you will get depression because your hormones are depleted. You're so much stressed, the serotonin can't come up. That's just what it is. It's science. Like, so he explained it to me in a way of a factual medical way that I said, okay, mm-hmm. it's nothing to do with my feelings about my child. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with me being cut out for motherhood. I'm struggling physically and the hormones aren't there to make me feel anything other than miserable.
And how long do you feel it took from that point for you to feel well again?
Yeah.
Whether that be mentally, emotionally or physically?
I would say, so I was prescribed medication and I had a big issue with that. So I had this like prescription sitting on my bedside locker for about 2 weeks.
And was that a stigma you felt?
Yeah.
Or?
It was, I don't want to take medication. I don't want to be on antidepressants. You know, I felt that it was a stigma. Just like I felt postnatal depression was a stigma. But I was going back to work, and that's what made me do it. Not like for me, which is shocking, but I was in such a place where I was like, right, I have to be okay for going back to work. I can't be dragging myself through the day and then going on air like, what, you know, I'm not right. I need to have energy. I need to be able to think straight. So I took the medication, and it took a couple of weeks from that to start feeling like myself again. And it took a couple of weeks of learning what the right dosage was for me. And I went back to the doctor, and he said, like, there's no point in you being with you being on this unless you're on the right dosage. Mm-hmm. So I had another stigma of, if you increase the dosage, I must be more mad. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm the more depressed I am, the higher the dosage has to be. And that's not it. It's just your physical makeup. You might need a stronger dose because of your physicality. You know, I'm taller. I was carrying more weight, so I needed a higher dosage. But like, I just made it so difficult for myself. Everything was a struggle. Yeah. The doctor had to talk me into it. He was saying,
like, what felt different once, like, how would you know, or how would you tell somebody who was going through this what to look out for in terms of feeling better?
Of feeling better. I knew that I started to feel better when I didn't spend the day giving myself a hard time over something small. So say the baby was very unsettled and I tried to get out for a walk and then he got sick or had to change his nappy. I would give myself so much crap for that, as in, you should have got out earlier. You should have done this. You should have done that. When I started to feel better, it was like, ah, well, I let it go. I let things go, and then gradually I started getting better. And before I knew it, I was laughing again. Like, I didn't laugh properly for months.
So it was like your inner critical part that was mm-hmm. berating you, relax back a little bit.
Yes.
And it wasn't so serious. Allowed you to come into self-energy a little bit more.
Yeah. Everything was very serious and very, what did you do that for? Like, oh, for God's sake. And at the worst time, it would have been, I just want to go sleep and not wake up, you know? And it was when I kind of said that out loud, it was like, oh, that's not good. Mm-hmm. That's a bit shocking.
Yeah.
And then when I felt like that again, but I was starting to get better, I'd say, I want to go to sleep and not wake up in my head. But then I knew I'd go to sleep and feel better when I woke up. So it was just that.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Lifting, I felt lighter.
Yeah.
Everything wasn't so heavy. And I could start to talk about it a little bit. But yeah, it's taken me 3 years to be able to say it. And if it was anyone else sitting here, I probably wouldn't talk about it publicly, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's really brave to be that vulnerable.
I mean, lots of people go through it. And I actually met a woman in the park one day. I had baby out for a walk. And she had 2 kids and she was busy, you know, and she was saying, oh, congratulations, you have a little baby. And he was a few months old at this stage. And I think she knew from the look in my eyes, I just looked like a shell of a woman. And she said, how are you getting on? And not that I was emotional, because I felt like I was almost in too much of a dark place to be emotional. I'd gone past that.
Really numb.
Numb and hollow and just felt empty. And she kind of looked at me and said, how are you getting on? And I was like, yeah. And she said, you know, if you're struggling, it's okay. I struggled very badly on my first one, and just go to your doctor. And I was like, she's speaking about it. The thing we do not mention, she's actually talking about it. I was shocked, but she was an angel, like a stranger that just came up to me, and she gave me her phone number and said, please go to your doctor if you're struggling. you're not the least important person that you think you are. I just thought that I was here to serve then, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing that a stranger.
Yeah.
She saw something in me. Kick up,
so. I haven't seen her again, but I text her to thank her because I went to the doctor.
Has that made you more aware, do you think, in terms of what you look out for in people, given the fact that a stranger was the person who prompted or inspired you to get help or feel less shame or guilt around things?
Yeah, shame is the word, Joanne, really. It's shame. It's just constant shame. And the fact that she spoke about it, I was like, wow, she's mentioning it, this terrible thing. I would be more conscious of what people are going through after having a baby, but I may not say it to them immediately because they might not be in the place. I think I'd just be there. And it was a stranger that came up to me, but it might be a trusted person that will, you know, prompt them to open up. So I'd just be there and check in, and instead of saying, I think you're suffering with postnatal depression, they may not be ready to hear that because I certainly wasn't.
Yeah.
And maybe it was the fact it was a stranger and it wasn't someone in my life that was talking about it. I was like, oh, wow, okay, maybe it's not this big dark thing that I have to keep secret and push down. I'd probably be more ready to talk to a stranger about it than I would someone close in my life because I wouldn't want to push them into that place.
And I think with a stranger, you are going into the situation with zero emotions.
Yeah.
You can't be angry towards that person or you'll have no perceptions or anything in terms of preconceived notions about that person. So literally you take what they say verbatim.
You're not afraid.
It's not loaded in any way.
Yes. You're not afraid of disappointing them either because they're not your mother. They're not your sister. You don't want them to think of you in a certain way. They're just going to take it as you are. So with a stranger, it's easier to talk about. It's unreal because like my sisters and my mom would be so supportive and my friends so supportive, but I didn't want to disappoint them.
We all play a role, really, to everybody in our lives.
Yeah,
probably completely subconsciously.
Yeah, 100%.
And that was towards the back end of your first maternity leave.
Yes,
and then you went back to work. What was the transition like after your first baby? A very tough maternity leave.
It was a very,
And then moving back into the workforce.
So I actually thrived going back to work. I loved it. And I think it was just that I put so much pressure on myself being at home. I was making all his meals. I was spending 24/7 with him because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. Like, and not take a break, which is ridiculous. Everyone needs a break. Like, so when I went back to work, I got a break, even though you're going into a newsroom and you're reporting on horrendous stories around the world. For me, it was a break from what I'd been doing for the last year. And it was going back to what I knew and I had confidence in it. And it was, you know, 15 years of being in this industry. And it came back quite like riding a bike, you know, like my first day back, I reported on one bulletin and then I went on and anchored another after not doing it for a year. And it just came back to me. It was like riding a bike. And I felt like, oh, I'm still me. Oh, right. I am still me. She's still in there somewhere. This is great. And I missed my baby, like I did. But I also found that part of me again. And I loved being back in work, I have to say.
Yeah. A question I like to ask our guests is that I believe every woman embodies high performance. You've certainly demonstrated a lot of that from what you've shared so far. What do you think about that statement and why?
I had to think about it because I would associate high performance in my head, rightly or wrongly, with an athlete and a male athlete at that. When I was really saying, okay, what's a high performance person in your head? I was thinking of a male athlete. And why? Like, women's bodies, I had to really question it. Well, where did that come from? Like, women's bodies are designed for high performance. You know, pregnancy is like running a marathon every day for 40 weeks in terms of what the human body can endure. Endurance wise, pregnancy is right up there with running a marathon every day.
Yeah.
So by design, just physically, not even mentally, our bodies are high performance machines. And after going through two pregnancies and then seeing what you produce, it's just unbelievable. But why am't I bringing the confidence of a high performance athlete into other aspects of my life? And I think that's something now that I will think about. And like if you're winning medals in a sport or in an endurance sport, you're going to bring that confidence into other aspects, relationships, business, any job, because you're going to say, well, I've done that, so I can do this. But for some reason, women, myself anyway, would, I don't see that as, well, that's very high performance. So I should feel confident and proud instead of, oh, I need to lose the baby weight. Like, that's madness. Yeah. You look what your body's done. Look, if you put on weight to swim the channel, you know, you wouldn't be saying, oh, I need to lose that weight. Look what you've done. And you did it for a reason. Like, yeah. I have two beautiful, healthy babies and it's thanks to my body.
Yeah.
So I'm really trying now to bring that confidence forward and seeing it that way.
What does that success look like for you on any given day?
Feeling happy. Happiness is a state like anything. That's just, but being, having ease of being. Ease of being in that I'm not giving myself a hard time. I'm letting it be. And like another big thing that I've been through in the last while is having a diagnosis of additional needs for my little boy.
Okay.
And dealing with that and just being present through all of the emotions for him. And just, it's endurance. Like, and I think endurance breeds resilience. And that you can, that's high performance. Like resilience is high performance. You can go into any situation and survive it, and not just survive it, you can thrive in it.
Yeah.
But like the additional needs thing has been another roller coaster, and getting a diagnosis when I was pregnant as well, that's, my body was going through a lot, my mind was going through a lot, and I was still working. So there, that was a hard time, and we're still learning. That's another process that we're going through. It's a journey, like, not to sound too cliche, but it is a journey. We have to fight for therapies and for things that will not, like, there's no making someone better if they have, say, an autism diagnosis or an ASD diagnosis, so they're on the spectrum. That's their brain. Like, you don't try and make someone with dyslexia better. You give them therapies so that they can achieve what they want to achieve. And that's what I'm learning about ASD, about the autism spectrum. You don't, there's no changing, and I would never want to change my little boy. He's absolutely amazing. So we just learn therapies to help him regulate so that he's not stressed out or finding things too overwhelming, and we go through it with him. But going through it with him, you need resilience and you need to just endure and be his safe space. Mm-hmm. So that has been a big thing for me in the last while. And a successful day is not losing it if there's been 10 meltdowns and I've just breathed through and then I give myself a break.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, that's success. And it's changed a lot. Like success 10 years ago would have been, oh, I did a huge breaking news story and we did a special bulletin. I was live on air for 2 hours. I interviewed the Taoiseach. That is a successful day, like, and I love when that happens. It rarely happens, but success now is I'm okay at the end of a tough day. The two babies are safe in bed and I'm going to plan some time for myself now. It's just looking after your mental health. Like, I know everyone says it, but it's your wealth. It really, really is.
Yeah. And in terms of returning to the workplace for a second time,
mm-hmm.
well, if anything, would you do differently this time?
I think I would give myself more time to prepare going back, and I'd look into childcare more, because that's a big worry. Like, you're leaving your child somewhere and that's going to be on your mind going into the workplace. I think I'd also contact colleagues and friends before going back, because that, if you haven't seen someone for a long time, there's a bit of anxiety there. So I might contact them and meet up with them and go in.
Pre-integration.
Yes.
Catch up on what's
going on. So you might slip
on
into it a little bit better. And I'll definitely start looking into the news again closer to the time. Like, I'll always watch the news, but I'll try and get back into the mind frame of reporting on it and working in it. So it's not such a change.
A massive transition.
Yes.
Reintegrate yourself back in.
Yeah, slowly. Just a bit better, and just try and make more time for myself in the lead up to it. Carve out a little something during the week, even when I go back to work or something at the weekend, that's just for me. So I'm not just a mammy and a worker. I'm still me.
And obviously, your little girl is only 8 weeks old. So in general, mm-hmm. what is it that you do for you when you're not being mammy and news anchor?
I haven't done anything yet, but I got great advice from an occupational therapist that I was bringing my little boy to, and she was saying, carve out time for yourself like you would a medical appointment for him. So a medical appointment, you make time for it, you get the kids minded. And she said, you're doing more for yourself by making time for yourself because he's co-regulating off you. Actually, all children co-regulate off their mom. More so, they came from their bodies. They need you to be calm. You're the safe space. So by doing that, I'm doing the best thing for my kids. So now, I haven't done it yet, but I want to get back into some form of exercise, walking, jogging. I want to start some sea swimming because I've never done it, but I heard it's really good for your mental health. So I have grand plans, but I really need to carve out that time. And luckily, I have a very supportive husband and very supportive family that will take on the kids if I can go and do something like that. So ask me again in 8 weeks' time. And so hopefully I have
we can lock in some sea swimming, so Caroline.
Yes, you can
some,
bring me in.
Cold water plunge.
Oh, God.
What are you doing after this?
I'm getting a coffee. I'm surviving on caffeine at the moment, but I will get into it. I want to do something for myself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's so important. I think what you're describing there is the old saying of filling your own cup first to have energy for everybody else. So happy to join you in your endeavours.
Thank you.
So just some questions to end the episode. Mm-hmm. What three key pieces of advice would you give to our listeners from your own life lessons and experiences?
So, yeah, I've had to think about this, like, you know, to condense them so that they sound nice, you know. I would say number one is stop talking to yourself negatively. Talk to yourself like a friend, because the way you speak to yourself is how you see the world. That's your brain. That's the language that you see the world in. So stop giving yourself a hard time. Just check in with how much you're criticizing yourself and just try it for a day. No negative speak to yourself. Number two, ignore what other people say or think about you. It's none of your business. None of your business. If you can leave that aside and just look after your own path, I think it's very freeing, and just it gives you the freedom to do what you want to do without the oppression of what others think. It's none of your business. And number three would be follow what brings you joy. You know, what lights you up inside, whether it be people, activities. You know when you feel it, and you know when it doesn't. You feel the opposite, the weight, but you feel light. You almost feel a spark. You know, if you were to say to me, do you want to do this? And my eyes literally light up. Yes, like that's that feeling. Yes. So follow that with conviction. It could be a person, you know, when you meet them, you know, you light up, there's fireworks. Follow that feeling for life. And I think everything else will follow, hopefully.
Definitely. And for the things that do feel a little heavier in life, what would be your strategy for reducing or being able to better tolerate or deal with those things that aren't necessarily the joy or the light in life?
Yeah, I'd say talk about them. I'm one of those people that, like, if you ask me how I am, be careful because I'll tell you, you know. But like a trusted friend, if you ask me how I am, I will tell you. Unfortunately, postnatal depression was a different story because it wasn't me, if you know what I mean. I will tell you how I am if I trust you. I think talking is a huge help to get through it, because you feel a bit lighter when you talk to someone about it. And then perseverance is just wait and see. Just if you feel crap today, just wait and see. Tomorrow, then you'll go, oh, okay, I'm not as bad today. Today isn't as bad. And then over time you learn they're just bumps in the road. They're clouds passing in the sky. They don't stay. This is not a feeling forever. So if you can persevere through those times, you'll see that they pass.
And I'll be amazed if you tell me that you're currently reading a book with everything that you have going on. But what would be your book recommendation?
I'm actually reading Wim Hof, you know, the Iceman, because I'm trying to...
Yeah, we're preparing for the cold plunges.
I'm doing cold blasts at the end of my showers as well.
Wow.
And yeah, you can probably hear the screams from down the road. But I'm just... that's just to prepare me for something that I want to do. But in general, I would say something that's helped me a lot is men are from Mars, women are from Venus, because you learn, okay, we're just different. And I think once you accept that men and women are different in their mind frames, in some things, not in all things, life would be easier. You don't feel personally attacked or offended by a lot of things. And also, I know it's a bit like naughty's self-help guru stuff, but I loved The Secret. I loved that book and just trying to embrace your own power of, look, even if you're not attracting things, you're thinking happy thoughts.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would recommend The Secret, and just to get in your head what you would like to happen in life. I think it's a healthy thing to do.
Get clear on where you're going or what you'd like.
What you'd like, and then feel those feelings as well. So then you get to know yourself. You get to know, oh, I'd really like to do that, and I really don't want to do that, you know.
Yeah.
So just exploring in your own head what you would like, what makes you happy, even if you don't believe in the law of attraction. I actually do. I think it does work. But even if you don't, it's nice to think happy thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. That's a blast from the past.
I know.
I'm sure there'll be a few books getting dusted off now to reread The Secret. I can't even remember when that was. Was that around 2010 or
It could have been even earlier.
Groundbreaking for its time.
Yeah, for its time. I haven't read a book since. No, I'm only talking. It just stuck with me. It stuck with me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to revisit it at some stage.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a good book if the tools stick with you.
Yeah.
Through life as well. And my final question is, what other high-performing woman should I be speaking to on this podcast?
You should be speaking to yourself, because you're a fantastic high-performing woman. So coming from media world, working, there'd be a couple of women in my head that are, you know, fantastic personalities on screen, but also are running a house and a family and maybe other enterprises. So two that would come to mind would be Karen Koster, the presenter, and Anna Daly.
Mm-hmm.
Both are amazing mammies and lovely people, and have changed career paths. Like Anna Daly was in marketing and then presenting, and now has a fashion brand, Little Bliss. Okay. And I just think that's amazing to be able to reinvent yourself, because some people, me included, would have it in your head, if you get a career and you're doing well, you have to stick to it, you know? And that's not the truth. That is just in your head.
Yeah.
You can succeed at anything. So people who reinvent themselves, but also hold on to the key part of them. It doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you're your true self, I think. And they are two women that I admire for that.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of stories of people reinventing themselves, and it's always quite inspiring and interesting to hear their stories. So definitely two people we'll add to the list.
Yeah, I'll give them a text first, maybe.
Yeah, I'll leave that one with you. So.
Yeah, thanks.
Caroline, it has been an absolute pleasure. I can't believe there was no tears.
I'm crying on the inside. No, I'll cry all the way home, but it has been, only you could get this out of me. It's stuff I never thought I'd talk about publicly, but also you make me want to help other people, if it does help people. Just to say, if you have postnatal depression, you're not a bad mom. If you have panic attacks, you can still do your job. And if you feel like you can't do something, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So if that helps people at all, that's my truth. That's what I've learned. And only you could get that out of me, I think.
Yeah. Well, look, your openness is unbelievable. I think sharing so authentically like that will only help a lot of people. As you say, you had your first baby 3 years ago, and they were all the feelings that you felt. And we feel as a society, we've come such a long way in terms of eradicating stigma and shame around certain topics. We talk about it more.
Mm.
But what's the reality? So we just need to keep talking the way you've talked so openly. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And yes, I won't be able to express my gratitude anymore than that.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks so much. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can join the High Performance Woman tribe by subscribing, liking and sharing podcasts with your friends and family, and by following me at High Performance Woman on Instagram and TikTok. I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.